I just finished Mindhunter, and I have off today, and I am supposed to be working out right now, but I'm like, well, let me watch the last 10 minutes of Mindhunter. It was the last episode. And now I'm just procrastinating even more from working out, because I really need to talk about it. What an awesome show. From beginning to end, I've spoken about this before on my Friends from College review, but what makes a great Netflix show, obviously great, is that I don't want to stop watching it. So anytime I had to go to work, anytime I had to sleep, anytime I had to eat, it's like, well, I don't want to stop Mindhunter because I want to see what's going on. I mean, what platforms like Netflix are doing, they're creating, 10-hour movies right now. It used to be, back in my day, you watch a 2-hour movie, that's it, you go on with your life. Now it's like, I got to commit at least 10 hours because I want to finish, I want to see what happens next. So, where do I start? So at the, I'll start at the end. The use of music in TV shows and movies cannot be understated. I think I really started noticing it, growing up in the 80s, the montages, like the Rocky montages or like the Karate Kid montages. In the 80s, montages were a big deal. And to the point where it just, became a glorified music video and became kind of cheesy. But like someone like Martin Scorsese uses music really well. He really thinks about where to place the music. Same thing with Quentin Tarantino. He or like his music supervisors really think about where a song can be for a movie. And what this does, it makes the movie better and it makes the song better. When The Sopranos Don't Stop Believin' in the season finale came out, everybody started buying Don't Stop Believing again because it reminded them of The Sopranos. The Sopranos reminded them of that song, and it made a good song even better. It sparked interest in it. So I'm saying that with using In the Light by Led Zeppelin from Physical Graffiti. Led Zeppelin's one of my favorite bands. They're just awesome and they're brilliant. And I do want to separate the art from the artist here because I do know some members of Led Zeppelin have a pretty questionable past in regards to treatment of women and just the whole groupie culture in general. That's for a different podcast. So the use of In the Light at the end when Holden, I'm forgetting the names, where Agent Holden sees Ed Kemper, and the way it begins, the way the song begins when he's walking to the hospital, and then just how it stops, and there's a crescendo again. Just so well done. It's funny because I think In the Light's a good song, but I never thought it was one of Zeppelin's best. I always found it boring. But now I love the goddamn song because of Mindhunter. I'm like, holy shit, they managed to make the song better, which is just what's so awesome about music and movies, and which I call this podcast Movies, Music, Movies, and More. So there you go. Jeez, this is the stuff I'm into. So that's one thing. And then the use of the music in general for this show has been very good, very sign of the times, very 70s, and just a good soundtrack, good stuff, a good wide range of things. So what also stands out, another thing about Mindhunter, and I'm forgetting the actor's name, but the lead, the actor who plays the younger agent, I've seen him before in a couple of shows. I first saw him in Boss with Kelsey Grammer, which was a good show. It was a scary show. It got canceled. But this, and then I saw him, so in Boss, he played a really creepy guy. And in Mindhunter, while the agent is good, he's doing good things, there's something like a little off and there's something a little neurotic about him. And this actor plays him so well. I don't want to look up the actor's name right now because I'm too busy talking. I'll do it at the end of the podcast and I'll put it in the description. But I don't know what he's like in real life, but he plays neurotic and he plays like a little off and he plays creepy really, really well. But his portrayal of the agent isn't so creepy that you're turned off by him. I mean, you actually root for him. You see his vulnerabilities and his neuroses in there. So I'm sure there's going to be a season 2, but I'm sure when season 2 comes around, it's going to explore that even more. And he was also in a show on HBO called Looking, where he also played a neurotic character, but more for, I guess, you know, not in a scary neurotic way, just like in a normal, for lack of a normal neurotic way. And he was very good in that show as well. That show's no longer there, but I'm, you know, obviously he's a great actor. I believe he was in Glee and he was on Broadway. I don't watch Glee. I'm not a big Broadway guy, but I first saw him in the show Boss. So he's great. All the acting is fantastic. Especially the guy who plays Ed Kemper. What makes a great villain in a show is, in some respect, having the audience like that villain. And I don't mean like as in root for. I don't root for villains in shows. I always root for the good guys. But by like, I mean you want to relate to the villain. You want to at least understand his or her motivations for what they do. And you also want to, by like, you want to pay attention to this person. You want to be kept on edge. You want to feel that unpredictability. You want to feel that discomfort from the safety of your couch watching this psychopath do his thing and feel that tension. Ed Kemper does that really well. There are so many great bad guys who do it really well, who are scary. The Butcher, Daniel Day-Lewis in Gangs of New York, is like that. Anytime you feel unease about that, Joe Pesci in Goodfellas. I think James Gandolfini's Tony Soprano is a very good example, because people actually rooted for Tony. They liked him. They wanted this criminal to succeed because they liked him so much. Walter White, same thing. So the actor who plays Ed Kemper, while I'm not rooting for him, I can't take my eyes off him when he's on the screen, because he's scary and he's unpredictable and he's dangerous. And that was especially shown at the end, where, you know, you didn't know what he was going to do. And that's just great writing. That's just great acting. That's just great directing. And when all that kind of stuff comes together, it obviously works. When it doesn't work, you get something like The Walking Dead with the character of Negan, where I've read Negan in the comic books, and the Negan in the comic books is in the same class of, you know, the Joe Pesci's, the, you know, the Ed Kemper's, the villains like that, the Daniel Day-Lewis's in Gangs of New York. Negan falls along those lines in the comic book. He's very, very scary, but you want to see more of him. You want to see what he does. He's unpredictable. He's kind of likable in a way, which is very off-putting. He's just a very charismatic character, a character that you would like to see more. The Negan in the show is not that. I think it's just a combination of the writing. I'm not too keen on Jeffrey Dean Morgan's performance. I think he's a little too over the top, a little too campy, a little too goofy. He seems one-dimensional, while Negan in the books is definitely, he is multi-dimensional, and that's why I enjoy reading the character of Negan and want to see more of him. So Mindhunter does that really, really well. What also stands out about this show is that, I'm just going to go back to my acting days. I remember I had an acting gig for a thesis for a John Jay College student. John Jay College is a college for criminal justice in New York City. So I was hired to do an acting gig where we had to reenact an interrogation. So I was in my, this was a long time ago, I was in my 20s. So I'm thinking, oh, okay, I have to reenact an interrogation. I'm thinking of the cop shows. It's like, where were you on the night of December 2nd, 1975? We saw you. We fingered you with this woman. You're going to confess. And the guy yells back, and they yell back, and then the good cop, bad cop. You know, you see it in all these fucking cop shows on TV and in the movies. From what I learned, at least from this John Jay College student, and Mindhunter kind of exemplifies this, is that that's not how interrogations work. And another show called The Night Of on HBO did this really well during their interrogations. What it is a conversation between law enforcement and the suspected criminal. You make the person feel comfortable. You talk about different things. You don't necessarily talk about the crime. You open the person up. It is very conversational. And I played this interrogation off as a conversation. I was so surprised when I got this. I'm like, wow, this is a conversation. And they're like, yeah, this is how it's done. So Mindhunter does that. They have conversations with the suspects until they confess, until they, you know, find certain triggers to do that. So that's what's great about that. And it's not like one of these cop shows where every week a cop is in danger and he's going to be killed. Except for the end where you're in fear for Holden's life, in a way, because Ed Kemper is going to hug him. You know, when Ed Kemper hugged him, you don't feel like any of the FBI agents are in danger at all. Because this is all procedural stuff. You feel that they're going to lose their job. You feel the conflict between everybody, you know, all the characters that's going on. You feel that. There's nobody holding a gun to their head. They're not in a building that's about to explode. You know, they're not in danger of losing their lives all the time. You see their personal lives. You see what they're going through. And it's still an exciting show, even though, you know, someone's not out to kill them. So I don't know really anything about the real people involved in Mindhunter, but, you know, as good shows do, they inspire people to look into this more. And, you know, I've been inspired by so many things by TV, into the real life aspects of it. So I'm going to look into Mindhunter, because it was just, a fantastic show. I'm trying to think of the women characters in the show. I'm pretty sure that I'm almost positive. I'm just trying to think the Bechdel test. That's where if you have women characters talking to each other, they're not talking about a man, or they're not talking about their relationships to men. I'm pretty sure Mindhunter passed with, again, I'm forgetting the names, but the woman from Boston who moved to the FBI to work with the agents. She was great. This is terrible. I'm forgetting the names, but the main character's girlfriend, she was a strong and great character too. There were really only two main women characters in there, and at least from what I remember, I think they were handled pretty well. They weren't damsel in distresses. They weren't, you know, there to prop up the main characters. They were their own, believe it or not, these women were their own people, their own individuals. They were out for themselves, and they had their strong opinions, and they didn't, you know, shrink away from anything, and they were, you know, vital to character development, vital to story, and they were just great characters. So I'm glad to see that going on more and more. It's not enough, but it's getting there with women in movies and TV. So I think that's it for Mindhunter, at least for now. Fantastic. I can't wait for season two, and I can't wait to look into this more. And if you want to look into me more, you can follow me on Twitter at Mike Lane Act. That's Mike, MikeLaneAct. I'm at Facebook at Mike Lane Actor. Podbean, please comment, share on Podbean, Facebook, YouTube, all that good stuff. So thanks for listening, everyone. And until next time, have a good one. Bye.